All right, welcome into the Chris Collinsworth podcast. With me today is one of my guys, Seth Galina, who I always love having conversations with. I read all of his articles because he was a former coach. He's a guy who lived it, breathed it, understood it. I don't think he was much in the flag football world playing quarterback.
I knew you were going to say that.
Huh? Was that a bad experience, right? I mean, you understood it better than you could implement it. Is that what you're saying?
The execution was just not there. And but that's the most frustrating part. Cause like, you know, it's not a high level of football. Like Montreal's Division 4 flag football, division is not very high, but I still couldn't handle it. So
they weren't dropping safeties down to the robber position on you or anything. It was just straight man coverage.
I could get my hands on a couple of picks, but, playing quarterback was not, it's clearly not for me.
So Seth's a former coach, and we always go round and round. And I'm going to give people a fair warning. This podcast is going to be a little bit in the weeds. This is not for the general public. So if you don't want to take a little deep dive into the way defenses have evolved and changed and what we might expect this year, then, you know, another podcast might be for you. But if you want to learn a little bit more about the game, which I'm always trying to do on a daily basis, this one might be something you enjoy. So I just got finished reading your article, and it really is interesting to talk about the evolution of defense. And you sort of started your article off with Pete Carroll. And for people who don't know, Pete Carroll obviously has been a defensive coach for a long time, but the beginning of that run with Seattle really kind of came about with a dedication to a single high safety or closed middle of the field type of coverage. Explain a little bit of what the basis was for Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting because we think about the Legion of Boom and a very specific style of defense that they ended up playing for all those great seasons. But, you know, Pete Carroll comes from a very different coaching tree, I would say, than what they ended up doing there. And when he was at USC, you know, he had, tutelage by Monty Kiffin, I believe. And when we think about Monty Kiffin, we think about the old Tampa Bay Buccaneers teams who were too high, cover two. I mean, that was the style at the time. So Pete Carroll comes from that. And I think that's what they kind of intended to do early on in Seattle. And then I think they just got the right players involved to say, hey, you know, we can play single high, because when you play single high, you end up is a lot of one-on-ones on the outside. With two high, you can bracket more receivers. You can, you know, play more coverage, as they'd say. One high, it's man to man. Whether it's cover three or cover one, a lot of that stuff is going to end up in a man to man single coverage type of situation. Well, it's certainly when you find players like Earl Thomas, who can play in the middle of the field by himself, when you have Richard Sherman, and we're talking about two Hall of Famers here, who can lock down one side of the field by himself. And then obviously great players underneath who can get into passing windows, like KJ Wright, like Bobby Wagner, like Cam Chancellor. So I think they kind of, in a sense, lucked into it. They weren't, from what I understand, they weren't planning on this when Pete Carroll got the job. This must be like 10 years ago at this point. But it just worked out that way. And you find the right players, and the league, because they were so good, the league poached all his assistant coaches, all his defensive coordinators. The league watched the film and said, this is what we want. This is the NFL now. We're going to do this because they did it right. And that kind of happens no matter what scheme in the NFL over the history of, the NFL's, you know, 100 years or whatever. So I think that's just how we got here, or how we got to a place in the mid 2010s where everyone was running the same kind of defense.
So let's break this down in its simplest form. So when we say middle of the field closed, basically what you're talking about is a safety in the middle of the field, like an Earl Thomas, and people who can run and people who can hit in that position. Because now you are going to, there are some holes in that kind of defense. I mean, we obviously know what they are now because people have been working it over pretty good. Yeah. Here in the past, you're going to see the Tom Brady's of the world and the Rob Gronkowski's run those seam routes, because think about there being, let's say it's a three deep zone. There'll be a safety and two cornerbacks back deep. And so the holes were really between the safeties and the cornerbacks. Whereas in a two deep, think about there being two deep or four across the field, which is quarters or cover four. A lot of times the holes in that defense are considered to be between the two safeties in the middle of the field or in the, whatever they call it, the honey hole on the outside there, where they're trying to go between the safety and the cornerback who's trying to play between the flat and trying to get some depth to get underneath where they get end up getting a lot of interceptions. So everybody understands the basics of where the holes are in that defense. But some of these teams now, and I'm going to go right to Sean McVay and maybe Kyle Shanahan, their running game style and some of this deep over stuff has really put a burden on that single high look with the safeties, right?
I think, you know, one of the things about playing with one high safety is that your second safety is now, to a certain degree, a pseudo, you know, linebacker, right? He's down, he's in the box. No doubt. Again, going back to Cam Chancellor, always the best example, a guy who could play linebacker basically for the Seahawks and be in the box and help with the run game. And the more people you put in the box, the easier it is going to be to stop the run, right? You just have more bodies around where the football is going to be. So now we have these guys, like you mentioned, Sean McVay and Kyle Shanahan, running a system where they're saying, okay, you want to play with all those guys in the box. We are going to show them a stretch run to the sideline. This is what we're going to show you. This is our base running play. You're going to have to attack it laterally.
You know, okay, let's slow down. Just a little bit there. When you say a stress run to the outside, you're talking about the outside zone. If you think about it, when you see it on television, it's sort of like choreographed offensive linemen. None of them are blocking anyone in particular. The offensive linemen are sort of sprinting to the right sideline. And you've got a running back, typically a guy who can really run, like in San Francisco's system, it'd be a 4-3 kind of guy. And they're trying to stretch you as far to the right as you can with those offensive linemen who are now smaller, not big mauler kind of people moving in front of it. And then it's up to the back to find a cut up lane, right, to run the football. And then what happened was, because everybody, all the defenses had to fly out of there too, teams started stopping and throwing back or throwing across the field the other way.
Right, and that's it. And the best example, I think, is always when I think about that those type of runs, even though they weren't known for this, I always think about the Peyton Manning Colts teams. Because remember, he used to get that snap, and he used to sprint almost to get that ball to the running back.
And you think
he was
never
going
to make it.
As hard as he could. Exactly. You never tell whether he was going to give it or keep it. So yeah, like you're putting so much of your resources, your like energy into showing the defense we are going to run the ball to the outside almost as far. If we can get to down the sideline, we will do it. Like you said, those 49ers team is really great at that. And then because you have all these linebackers, because you only have one high safety, we can get a crossing route on a play action from whether it's a tight end or whoever else, receiver, coming against the grain, basically, and get him open that way. Because the safety has to stay deep because he's the only safety. If you're a single high safety, you got to cover the middle of the field deep or else you're going to get a post route over your head. So he's got to stay deep. You've compromised the linebackers, on the run fake, and you can get these routes at, I don't know, 10 to 20 yards, you know, 15 yards down the field, pretty wide open, on these play action plays. So I think that's kind of the issue with, you know, continuing to play in these one high defenses is saying, okay, yeah, we can stop the run. But can we stop all the play action, which is really how teams are getting these explosive plays on us and how they're beating us is all these play actions.
You hit on the outside zone, but I think there's another form of that going on right now, and it's with wide receivers who can block. And right at the top of my list, I put Cooper Kupp. So now you go into these condensed formations. So instead of when I was playing receiver, we were always flanked out by the numbers or even outside of that, whatever. But now the Cooper Kupps of the world are coming down inside And so you almost are in some ways are forced to play a single high safety, because otherwise now you've got this wide receiver who's a good blocker, can come in there, help get the edge. And so they're banging away on you, right? And here comes Cup and he's blocking and he's blocking and he's blocking. And all of a sudden here he goes scooting across the field on the other side. And you've got issues over there. So the formations have come into play here with how defensive have had to react.
It's funny because when I was kind of in my, let's say, infant stages of really trying to learn football, so much of the personnel usage was, okay, we've had these big tight ends on the field for 100 years, but what if these guys could split out? Like, what if the tight end could actually be a really good receiver? So we could use him as a blocker, but then, you know, without, you know, subbing or anything, we could get him as a slot receiver. And now it's almost like you're saying with the, it's almost flipped now where we're looking at these receivers and saying, okay, well, what if they can block? And like you said, Cup is a great example. Obviously his teammate, Robert Woods, he's in Tennessee now, but great example. It's like, what are you going to do? You're going to have to play with lighter. If you're a defensive team, you're going to have to play with quote unquote lighter personnel. You can't put three linebackers on the field when they have three receivers on the field. So now you have to play with two linebackers and, you know, a nickel, a slot corner, whatever you want to call it. And they can take advantage of that. Now they're bigger, stronger, physical in the run game because they have these players who want to get their nose dirty. And that's really what it comes down to.
And it really does.
I mean, you know that.
It does start to limit you a little bit. Like Jalen Ramsey now is almost wanting to play in that inside role because he's getting no action at all. If he's out there flanked out wide, they just go, okay, other than the Bengals went after him a little bit in the Super Bowl. But generally, so he's moved into more of that star position, which is a sort of a traditional, I don't know, what would you call it, slot or strong safety kind of role in there, just so he can get in on the action. But that's sort of taken away his best skill set, which is covering those deep balls and all the different things. The other team that immediately comes to mind, the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, that's all we talked about a season ago was now all these defenses are playing too high, quarters looks, all the different things. And you go back, you go all the way back to the great play in the Super Bowl, right? Whatever it was, 4th-and-20 against the 49ers. And they're going to do one of those deep overs and Patrick Mahomes. I can remember the NFL films on the thing said, do you think we have time? And what he was talking about was, do you think I have time to throw where Tyreek Hill is going to fake that deep over route, that deep cross, and then peel back out to the outside, which is what ultimately they hit and was ultimately the play that won the Super Bowl. So when you add those deep overs and the speed of a Tyreek Hill, now you've got to cover him crossing your face as a safety, but also going back the other way.
Yeah, and this is a team that absolutely dominated the league, as we know, for, you know, during the Patrick Mahomes era, at least with Tyreek Hill being able to just take the top off of defense, crossing route, and then because of his, elite speed and Mahomes' ability to buy time in the pocket, being able to hit even deeper plays, like you said, on that, the 4th-and-20 where it's basically a really deep post corner. I mean, as deep as you can get for a route. And then, okay, well, you want to try and, in a sense, play two high safeties and deal with that crossing route by the fact that you have the two safeties instead of one. Well, now you're going to have to deal with the fact that Travis Kelce is the best tight end in the league, basically. So they always had that good mix of being able to say, okay, we can stay underneath because we have Kelce, but we can also go down the field because we have Tyreek Hill. And obviously we're going to see how that changes because they struggled a bit last year as teams played a lot more too high against them. And obviously now without Tyreek Hill, that's a big piece.
And the other thing that teams are doing now is they go, we don't care how much you run the football. We literally don't care if you're averaging 6 yards per carry.
Yep.
And I think just the raw numbers that you probably know better than I do, but they're somewhere in the category of the average run in the NFL is about 4 yards a carry. the average pass, not completion, the average pass in the NFL is about 7 yards. Yeah. So people with brilliant mathematicians like we have around here are looking at me like, what are you, stupid? Of course you're not going to run the football. You're giving up 3 yards every single time you turn around and hand the thing off. But now what we've seen is because of that two deep or four deep kind of coverage, it is much tougher to stop the run. And so we are seeing some teams, especially when they play the Kansas City Chiefs, they want no part of Mahomes and Hill and Kelce throwing the ball. You can turn around and hand that thing off all you want, Andy Reid. We don't care. And eventually you're going to get a holding call or you're going to get a fumble or you're going to get something. And that's kind of how they're playing them right now. And it was effective.
I think the Bills are also a good example of trying to find this balance. And I think like the quarterback play in football in general, and certainly in the NFL, has just like gotten so much better over the last 10, 15 years. You know, you have these kids who are, you know, 12 years old going to like private quarterback coaches. So they're just growing up with like really good coaching, a lot of reps, and they're just coming into the league as like really good quarterbacks. So like, I know we always like want to make fun of like the bottom 10 starting quarterbacks in the league. They're no good. These guys are actually like really, really, really good. So the quarterback play in the league is so good that you just, even against some of the lesser quarterbacks, you kind of don't have a choice but to say, okay, we're going to have to game plan to stop the pass and kind of live in the world like you're saying, where, okay, look, you're going to hand the ball off. And even if, you know, once in a while you go and rip off a 12-yard run or something, like we're kind of okay with that. But getting back to the Bills, I think is really interesting because the Bills were, I think in the first 2 years of the Josh Allen era, and obviously he didn't play very well in those 2 years, even though they went to the playoffs, I believe, in the second year. They ran an NFL offense, or whatever you think of as an NFL offense, they would do. And then after that second year, and obviously Allen just improved his accuracy, improved his decision making, but they said, we're going to be spread. We're going to have basically four receivers on the field as much as possible. Plus, when we do have a tight end on the field, it's Dawson Knox, who is not a great blocker, but he's a really good receiver. And our running back is not even going to help us protect in pass protection. Like, he's going to be out, and we're going to have five eligible receivers out in the route all the time. And we're going to throw the ball more than anyone else, especially on first down. So they kind of just, in a sense, like they offensively blitzed the league in 2020. With just throwing the ball all over the yard to whoever they could. And obviously having, you know, trading for Stephon Diggs helps a lot, but they were super spread and Josh Allen just became this unbelievable, in a sense, like a one-on-one player. You couldn't tackle him in the backfield. He would escape, make plays. His arm talent was, you know, his top of the league. So they said, we're just going to throw the football every time. We're not even going to pretend like we're going to run the football. And I think after their AFC title game loss to the Chiefs in 2020, where the Chiefs played a lot of six defensive backs on the field, which is becoming more trendy, but not quite like they were doing it in that title game. A lot of teams that played them in 2021, that played the Bills in 2021, said, okay, wait a minute. If you're going to treat every first down like it's third down, maybe we should start treating it like it's third down two on defense and saying, we're going to blitz you. We're going to play with lighter personnel on the field. And we're just going to treat it like exotic blitzes and simulated pressures and all these cool buzzwords that they're doing on defense, because you're not making an attempt to run the football. So we're not going to make an attempt to stop the run. And the Bills realized at some point, you know, they had a tough game against the Steelers week one. They had a really tough one in Jacksonville, I think week 9 or something like that, only scoring 9 points, I believe, or 6 points. And they kind of said, okay, we're not going to start throwing the football a lot. We're not going to start running the football that much more. However, we're going to pretend like we are. We're going to put another tight end on the field. We're going to put a fullback on the field. We're going to do all that stuff. We're going to run more play action just to at least show you that we're doing that. And I think that's a good example of like kind of where we're going in the league. Where it's like, yeah, we know we have to pass the football most of the time. However, there can be a point of kind of diminishing returns where we're saying, okay, well, now the defense is starting to catch up to us. What do we do now? And the next part is like, okay, like the Giants, Giants have Brian Daboll, who was the offensive coordinator in Buffalo over these 2 years. Can you do that same thing that you did with this freak of nature, Josh Allen, that you do with Daniel Jones? Like, is he a good enough one-on-one player to make it right all the time? And I think that's where I'm very interested in what this next season is going to look like in terms of how often we're going to throw the football as a league.
Yeah, it was interesting. I caught a lot of hell for my comments when Buffalo was playing Kansas City earlier this year. And because what happened was exactly what you were saying, that he is their one-on-one player. So they were playing a lot of defensive backs. They're trying to play the pass. And Josh Allen ran for 763 yards last year. So a big part of this offense is having that beast come running down the field, averaging 6.25 yards per carry, which is about the same average as if you're throwing a pass, right? So it's not so much the running game as it is Josh Allen running that made the difference. But you also saw Devin Singletary take off the last six games of the year because of a lot of those same things. But now they're switching up a little bit, Buffalo. So now what do? They signed Duke Johnson, who's going to come out of the backfield and be able to catch some balls. They draft James Cook, you know, to play running back, who is going to add another passing element to it. So it is interesting to me just how much the point that you made that I hadn't really thought about was, okay, they want to spread and they want to throw it around. Who did they sign at tight end this year? O.J. Howard. So O.J. Howard can run. He's a big guy. He can block. He can do all that kind of stuff. So you've got Dawson Knox, and you have the possibility of O.J. Howard in there, who can block a little, but still runs 4-5 something, whatever, or at least he used to. That's going to give you a little bit of the old days of the Patriots look with those two tight ends, right? And what you're going to have to match up and try and figure out with that group, because you can't just leave six defensive backs on the field if you've got two tight ends.
Right. I think, and again, it's like the illusion that we're a big team, we're going to run the football, and they're still going to throw the football as much as anyone in the league. I mean, that's what they were at the past two seasons. I think number one or number two in terms of just overall passes thrown or pass rate. They're still going to do that. It's just like you said, it's like, okay, well, how do you match up against us when we have a little bigger personnel in the field? And I think that to me is an interesting thing. And it's like, is it going to be a copycat situation where a lot of other teams are going to be kind of a step behind and saying, okay, we got to throw the football 65% of the time on first down or 70% of the time on first down. And then you just don't have this player, like I said, in Josh Allen. That's the concerning thing. It's like, we want to throw the football all over the yard and it's great. But it's like, if you don't have this special talent, you need to surround him with the scheme, with the players that can get you into more favorable matchups. And that's where I wonder where we're going.
All right. I want to play a little speed dial game with you here. Okay. So I just want to throw out, we talked about Buffalo, and I think that's a great one. Let's talk about the Kansas City Chiefs now without Tyreek Hill. Now they've got Mecole Hardman. They've got guys that can run and make plays. But do they have the same offense? Do they have, I mean, because really Tyreek Hill was a running back and a returner before he was ever a wide receiver. The guy could practice at 100%, which I've never seen any wide receiver. I've never seen Tyreek Hill run anything less than full speed in my whole life because he does it in practice too. So for timing and all those things, it's fantastic. The impact that you think he'll have not being on that offense now.
Yeah. And I think, like, you know, he's a speed guy, but I think his receiver skills are underrated. I mean, hard to be underrated when you're Tyreek Hill and you've, you know, caught so many balls and have Super Bowls and all that stuff. But I think his, like, tracking skills, his route running is so good that I think it's going to be incredibly hard to replace. And then I think that Travis Kelce was not the same Travis Kelce last year that he was. And look, I don't have his age in front of me. He must be 32, 33. You know, getting into those ages, tough for a receiver to play at that age, I guess. So that's where I'm concerned, where it's like, hey, if you had like a Travis Kelce from about 5 years ago and you got rid of Tyreek Hill, I would say, okay, we're probably okay. But Travis Kelce was not good when pressed last year. you know, our numbers show that not great at the stuff that he was so good at for so long. And yet he still like led the league in receiving or tight ends in receiving, but he just wasn't the same player. So that's what concerns me. It's like, hey, teams are going to play too high against you. You don't have this weapon to even beat a too high defense with the speed of Tyreek Hill, though they do have speed, but they're not like great receivers. Like, are we good enough in the underneath areas? Travis Kelce, if he bounces back, sure, probably. Patrick Mahomes showed that he was a little unsure, I think, at times throwing in the underneath parts of the field. Obviously, given his track record, I would say he'll figure it out, given that he's Patrick Mahomes. But still, I think that the offense is going to look very different. I think you might see two tight ends on the field. I think you might see them running the football from under center a little bit more. Just to mitigate some of the losses and how teams played them last year.
It'll be interesting to see how Mahomes reacts. He's going to have to develop his game to play that instead of the movement and, you know, sling it down to Tyreek, which he was pretty amazing at doing. The other team I've got to tell you that I have my eye on this year, for all the reasons we've been talking about, are the Miami Dolphins. I know this has turned into a referendum on Tua, which I mean, come on. Tua, he's not a big arm quarterback, but there have been plenty of big, non-big arm quarterbacks who have played really well. Joe Montana didn't have a big arm and he kept winning Super Bowls. But if you can take Mike McDaniel's offense, which is Kyle Shanahan, Mike Shanahan's offense, all the things that we've been talking about, the outside zone, they pick up Chase Edmonds, Sony Michel, Raheem Mostert. Mostert was the speedster for the outside zone kind of stuff. And now you're going to put them in the same backfield with some of the fastest receivers in the game, right? We already talked about Tyreek Hill, but Jalen Waddle coming in there, Gesicki at the tight end position with that sort of outside zone approach. Do you see the possibility, and maybe it's too early to expect everybody to get it in this first year, but it feels like if something's going to work with Tua, that this is going to be it. The Jimmy Garoppolo kind of offense that he can execute, and he has the kind of big playmakers to make it work.
Yeah, I think like upgrading a little bit at least on the offensive line, Danny Terron Armstead to play left tackle, that's a big deal. I think they're certainly hoping for development from some of their young offensive linemen who they've picked in the past few years in the draft. That hasn't really happened yet. But, you know, we got to give them time, especially on the offensive line. It takes a couple of years to develop. So hopefully a guy like Austin Jackson and Robert Hunt, something like that, can develop into a solid starter. We know that Armstead, if he's healthy, he's going to be a top tackle for them.
If he just stays healthy, that, right?
Yeah. I think, you know, the Tua thing is interesting. Like you said, doesn't have the biggest arm. Those guys have, we've seen that, been able to work with that. It's just like, we got to see it from, I think, the processing perspective. Like, can you consistently make the right decision, stuff like that? Because his arm isn't bad or anything. It's just like, it's average. And you just, if you have an average arm, that means you got to make up for it in other ways. And I don't think he's there yet. But again, he's only going into his third year, so we got to give him some time. And I think, yeah, like the offense works. I think you're going to see slightly different, obviously, than what we saw with the 49ers. And I think the run game will be relatively similar, but I think you're going to see a heavy dose of RPOs. I mean, they have three guys who are deadly, you know, slant runners after the catch, catch it quickly with Gesicki, with Waddle, with Tyreek Hill, all guys who played in like RPO style offenses. So I think going back into stuff, honestly, some of the stuff they did last year with Tua, which I think was really good, and then using your unbelievable speed on these crossing routes. I mean, and they did it with Waddle a lot last year, but now you get Tyreek Hill, who's probably the best in the league at that. So I think it's interesting. It does hinge on Tua. I mean, we understand how important the quarterback position is in this league. But I think they've put together something for them. And the defense, the defense is returning a lot of players. Plus, new coaching staff, but I think they retained their defensive coordinator. So there's going to be continuity there. It could be a big season, but yeah, it really does depend on Tua.
Yeah. The other one that I find really interesting is that Mike McDonald now takes over as the defensive coordinator in Baltimore. This has always been a team sort of based on the running game and on defense. Wink Martindale, who created a lot of pressure over the years with different exotic schemes, blitzing out of the secondary. And you just wonder now, do they have the kind of players that can get pressure on their own? I don't know that much about Mike McDonald, the new defensive coordinator, came over from Michigan, coached with Jim Harbaugh over there. So the family obviously thinks highly of them. But your thoughts on that defense and how long that might take, and do they have the personnel to make it work now? Because most people have Baltimore, even over Cincinnati, as the favorite in that division.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with how injured they were last year. Obviously, Lamar Jackson missed games, and then defensively, they were a little beat up. I think your point about them trying to create pressure from you know, their four down defensive linemen without coming with all that exotic stuff is going to be probably the biggest factor. When I watched, you know, Michigan last year, it's funny because Michigan was this under their ex-defensive coordinator, Don Brown, for about 5 years, I believe. They were a very blitz-heavy, man-to-man, exotic pressure, which was very Ravens-like. And then they go out and they fire Don Brown. They bring in this guy, Mike McDonald, from the Ravens. So you're thinking, okay, well, they were kind of doing the same thing that the Ravens were doing already, so nothing's really going to change. And McDonald came in and played a lot more like, you know, four-man rush. We're going to play zone. We're going to start with two high safeties. Even if we end up playing with one high safety, we're going to start with two high safeties and then disguise it as much as we can. So it was more like a college-y defense, more like you said, rush with four, get people in the underneath the zones, get a robber safety going, stuff like that. So it is going to be completely different. If he brings that style back to Baltimore, Mike McDonald, it is going to be completely different than what we're used to. But, you know, you're adding a guy like Kyle Hamilton, who could be an everything type of player. Another year of Odafe Owe, who, you know, showed some good pass rushing. Calais Campbell, obviously, we know his pedigree. So I think you're good. Like you said, you're going to have to get pressure with four because it's going to be different, but at least you can mitigate some of their, I think, hopefully some of their issues with you know, injuries and you know, covering the pass, and then obviously adding Marcus Williams, who's a, you know, hell of a safety as well. So
yeah, I mean, just getting their two running backs back, right, and getting their two cornerbacks back, Peters and Humphrey, is going to help as well. The one thing that we've been talking about defense. And the one guy that sticks out to me, because a lot of this tree comes from Vic Fangio, and yet I don't think the average fan has much of an appreciation. They know he went down, you know, took over at Denver. They didn't do well on offense, but the defense could always play. Where do you put Vic Fangio in the evolution of defenses as far as his significance in this change?
Yeah, I mean, it's incredible. And I wonder, like you said, a lot of, like, you know, the average fan maybe doesn't understand how much he means to football right now. He's not coaching in the league this year. He had a stint in Denver. They didn't have a quarterback. It didn't work out. But everywhere else he's been as a defensive coordinator, he's been lights out. You know, with the 49ers, with Harbaugh, and then with the Bears, he was really good as a DC. So, like, he's been great everywhere. And I think it's interesting because, you know, we can boil, let's say if we boil it down, his scheme to the opposite of what we talked about to start the show, Pete Carroll, one high safety, them playing, hey, we're going to play two high safeties. We have a ton of different coverages we can play out of it, but it's going to start, you know, in a basic look and two high safeties, and then we can do whatever we want out of that. And, you know, in, like, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I believe in, like, you know, 2017, 2018, 2019, when he's with the Bears, and I believe that before that with the Broncos as a defensive coordinator, they were doing this and no one else in the league was doing it. like the numbers are startling in terms of them starting with two high safeties and the rest of the league starting with two high safeties. And then his, one of his proteges, Brandon Staley, coaching outside linebackers for him, gets the job being the defensive coordinator with LA with the Rams, and they have the number one defense in the league that year. And then you look at it and it's like, okay, who are the two teams that are playing with two high safeties in 2020? Just those two guys. But the Rams having the number one defense gets people watching the film. It gets people understanding, oh, this is different than everything else we're doing. And then the crazy thing is like 2021, this is just a year later, 2021, and half the league is playing like this. So it's like, and I think a lot of that has to do with, I don't know if this would have been possible 15 years ago, 20 years ago, but just the way information travels in the internet age, I guess I would say, has allowed this process to speed up at an unbelievable rate. And the whole league, I mean, this year is going to be crazy when it comes to two high safeties. Three quarters of the league is probably going to, honestly, every team minus maybe the Colts with Gus Bradley are probably going to line up like that.
This could be a return to some old school football. We might see a 2,000 yard rusher. We probably will see at least one 2,000 yard rusher. You add the extra game, right? The 17th game, and the whole thing. There are guys that play differently out of it. Like Todd Bowles plays too deep, but he's coming after you, you know, to some extent. He's got those two linebackers that can absolute fly. Sometimes they make the tackle. Sometimes they don't. But now with Todd Bowles taking over for Bruce Arians and, you know, no risk it, no biscuit, most defensive coordinators, when they take over, somewhere in the back of their mind, they really believe if that offense just doesn't screw it up and turn the ball over, I can win it with my defense. Do you think we're going to see much different out of that offense, despite the fact that Byron Leftwich still there as the offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I don't think we'll see that much. Like you said, offensive coordinator stays the same. Their second offensive coordinator, Tom Brady, stays the same. So, I don't think it's going to – you know what I mean? Like, they're going to keep it as consistent as possible. And at the end of the day, it's going to be a lot of – what Tom wants, right? He's the guy in charge, really, to a certain degree. I know that, you know, when he came into Tampa Bay, there was some, you know, discussions or whatever and trying to figure out what that offense was going to be. And it does look very different than the Patriots offense that he was in, but, it's really up to him to make these decisions of what plays he wants and stuff like that. So I don't think it'll change that much. And I think the defense will continue to be aggressive, like you said, them playing, you know, more of a five defensive linemen look and dropping edge players off and stuff like that. I think they'll keep it the same. And they had injuries too. Godwin got injured. So hopefully they're healthy.
So one final question, this one about the Green Bay Packers. Is it possible that this team could be as different as what some of us are thinking they could be? Now you've got Aaron Rodgers, who was two-time MVP, four-time overall, two times in a row. He loses Devontae Adams. They've got two great running backs. I really think there's a chance that we're going to see this year at least the possibility of two running backs for the Green Bay Packers going over 1,000 yards. But the other part of this is what they're doing defensively. If there was a team that could come out of nowhere and be the number one ranked defense this year, it would not surprise me at all if it were the Green Bay Packers. You got Rashawn Gary, who went from being very average early in his career to now really doing pretty well alongside Preston Smith, both of them right around 10 sacks. You've got Jair Alexander, who really missed most of last year with the shoulder injury that he had. You've got the rookie Devontae Wyatt, who I thought was so impressive as sort of a three technique out of that Georgia defense. They didn't take a receiver with that first round pick two times over, and yet they were able to do it. You've got Devondre Campbell, who I don't know what happened to him, but all of a sudden he was become an all-pro inside linebacker. They draft Quay Walker in the first round as well, a speed linebacker. And guys came out of nowhere off this team. Eric Stokes, who was looked like the real deal in his rookie year, alongside Jair Alexander, and Rasul Douglas, who was the hero of all heroes last year with 5 interceptions, 2 he returned for touchdowns, and 2 of the best safeties with Amos and Darnell Savage on the back end. Where is the spot I'm not supposed to like about the Green Bay Packers on defense? And if they can throw it just a little bit with their wide receiving core, which you know they're going to be able to do with Aaron Rodgers, this team looks tough to me.
Yeah, I mean, and I think the schedule sets up nicely too. I would say, you know, linebacker, you have a rookie, like you said, Quay Walker. You never know what you're going to get from a rookie. Though the tape looked really good last year at Georgia. Devontae Campbell, you know, he was great last year, but it's just one season where he's been great in this league. So maybe he reverts back to who he was before. And then I would say maybe the linebacker core. But, you know, other than that, I mean, the safeties are really good. Like you said, Eric Stokes, I think a lot of people were surprised when they took him where they did, but he had a really good year. And then you're padding there on the defensive line with Devontae Wyatt, and you can allow a guy like Za'Darius Smith to go to Minnesota because, like you said, Rashawn Gary came on like crazy last year, and you still have Preston Smith. So, yeah, to me, this is as good of a defense on paper, at least, that could be a top 5 defense. I think in terms of when you talk about running the football with them, I think especially early on as they were trying to figure out how to make an offense without one of the best receivers in the league and Devontae Adams, I think you'll see a lot more running the football, more play action, stuff like that, just so they figure out what they are so they can be ready for whatever life throws at them in the playoffs.
Yeah, I just keep looking at this team and sort of a – like I think the AFC South has a couple of softer teams in there that pad your record a little bit. And I think the Green Bay Packers have the benefit of the same thing as well. I mean, they should beat Detroit. They should beat Chicago. Who knows what they do with Minnesota. But they should be right there too. I know you've got to run. You've got another meeting with a buddy of mine, and tell him I said hello. And but Seth Galina, you do great, great stuff, writing the articles and all the stuff with PFF. So we appreciate you.
I just wanted to add, the PFF College Football Preview Magazine is out. Me and my best friend Anthony Tresh put a lot of time and effort into that. So go on pff.com and find that and have fun looking up your favorite teams.
It is unbelievable the amount of data. If you think our draft guide is amazing with like 1,000 pages on the draft, Mike Renner puts together, what these guys do with this college football thing is just amazing. I wish I had time to read all 1,000 pages, but I'll catch it. I usually start my college football season in January sometime. And so I have 2 football seasons, NFL season, then the college season starts in January. So, all right, Seth, have a good one, pal. Thanks.
All right. See ya.